We'd like to welcome everyone to the study session from May City Council, Thursday, March 4th, 2010. I'd like to excuse Council Member Dave Richens, who's not feeling well this morning. So he'll probably be following us from home. So Council Member Richens, get well. And Council Member Summers, probably just running a little bit late. First item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on the fiscal year 10-11 budget infrastructure life cycle adjustments. I don't know who came up with that term, but could you please put that in English, first of all?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, Mayor and Council.
Mr. Odom.
What this is talking about is all of our, last week we had a discussion on maintenance and levels of maintenance to maintain assets, to safe work environment, and maintain buildings into the future, looking at the long term. So we thought we'd come back this week and talk about some of the life cycles that we look at. Every fall, as part of our forecast, we take what I would call asset pools, and I'll go through on page two there. We look at things like vehicle replacement as an asset pool. We look at our facility maintenance as a pool, our information technology infrastructure, which is our network and backbone type of assets, our personal computers, which are mostly desktops and the laptops that the police use in their police vehicles, and parks maintenance facilities. So we pool these items, we look at what we're supporting into the future and what kind of maintenance needs we need to maintain them through their full life or extend their life. So that's what we're calling life cycle plans. And we model each of these based on their cost, the number of items that we've got. We're always looking at ways to stretch them out and gain as much efficiency to make sure we're getting a benefit on the cost-benefit ratio. You know, is it costing us more to maintain than to replace? Those kind of things. So we're constantly looking at those things.
And once again, you hit a certain point in time where it makes no sense to continue putting money into a car, for example.
Vehicles,
you know, if it's going to spend half its time in the shop, or if you're going to continually maintain it, you're better off replacing it and buying a new car at that time.
That is
correct. What you try to. That's what you try to identify, is that point where you cross that, where the lines cross.
That is correct. And we evaluate each vehicle fleet services, and I've got area experts on each of these areas if you have specific questions here this morning.
Just quickly, Chuck, I mean, part of Mayor and Council, what we're doing too, is this is what we build into our budget every year, because we know these are items that not always have kind of a smooth annual allocation. They can go up and down. We may need more vehicles one year than the next. We need different levels of maintenance and facilities. But for budgeting purposes, that can put a lot of strain on the budget if that number is going up and down in big variations. So we try to find a way to kind of smooth out those expenses over a period of time and really try to plan out. The other thing is we're looking at it as a multi-year approach, not just year to year to year. That way, if we can see that there's going to be a large maintenance item coming up in the future, we can start planning for it ahead of time and start putting some dollars aside. Or if we know that there's going to be a large fleet purchase, or maybe specifically we're starting to see on our ITD infrastructure, we've got some aging infrastructure in that area, in our phone systems and information technology systems.
Thank you.
And so all those things we try to plan out, even in parks. We look at, we've done this exercise a little bit with council where we looked at the aging of our pools and recognizing that we have pools at different levels of a condition as far as the pool, their age. And so we try to plan ahead, because one thing in our budgeting, we try to avoid these big spikes in expense.
Yeah, so the idea is that we pay a consistent amount each year so that we can avoid paying a huge amount,
right,
actually earlier, later, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because if you don't maintain on an ongoing basis, the assets wear out sooner, and you'll end up paying a larger amount either to try and bring them back up to where they should be, or replacing them long before you should have had to have replaced
right.
them.
And that's just the cost of the asset. Now, if we look at the personnel to support it, you don't want those big spikes either. We can't, you bring in a huge number of garbage trucks. It puts a new strain on fleet to process and get things processed.
So the idea is to even these expenses out. And while the temptation, especially in budgetary times like we have, say, I can hold off changing that oil in that car or changing the brakes till next year. What we want to do is we're trying to resist that temptation to be foolish and not to spend on things that'll come back to bite us next year and the next year and the next year.
And we have a recent example, and I don't mean to bring up bad memories, but in the fall of 2007, we had a failure with our network system. Took the city down for a day, and it was about 2 weeks to recover. Well, it identified that infrastructure need, and we really began to really hone in and look at these issues. And that's a good area of where we look in these forecasts about new technology.
And we're lucky we were only down for a day, and we could recover in 2 weeks.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
So we were looking at all that new technology, what we can do in pricing, the obsolescence of that equipment, those kind of things go into the factors we look at.
Okay. And some of the things we're looking at are efficiencies. There's a multi-year project, a three-year-plus project to replace our aging telephone infrastructure. It's part of the expenditures you see in 910. And by implementing a new telephone system over 3 years, we'll actually gain efficiencies in maintenance. It'll save us recurring about up to $250,000 annually in maintenance savings. So replacing a system has an ROI of about 4 years, and after that, it's a positive cash flow from that perspective.
So everything we've said is about smoothing out these costs, making sure we're getting the best cost benefit. And another good example of what we're doing, if we go back to page 4, we're making some recommendations for some reductions on what we're talking about. Now, I'll start with the ones that we're not making recommendations on, the PC cycle replacement and the parks maintenance facility. The PC cycle we've been doing, that was probably our first
personal computers.
Okay. Was probably one of the first life cycle items that we looked at. When we first began looking at it, we had a three-year life cycle on them because of the obsolescence. They wouldn't keep up with the software, the speed, and so forth. Well, as time has gone on, we don't have the obsolescence in the hardware so much, so we've stretched out the life. However, we're supporting almost 5,000 units. That sounds like a lot of units, but that includes everything in the field, control rooms, you know, you've got for all the utilities, all those valves and everything, they're all a PC.
Yeah, you have a lot of computers that don't have a person sitting in front of them that are just in a room or a control area.
Libraries. You've got a huge number.
Right.
Well, this is requiring us now to stretch the life out to about 5.5 years. Now, what we're doing is I won't say gambling, but we're taking it from an evaluation standpoint of we're going out of warranty for about a year and a half on some of these units. But what we'll do is we'll take low utilization computers and reassign to those non-critical. So, yeah, when I say it's a little bit of a gamble, but we're evaluating it from a critical use.
We're identifying our risks.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We're managing our risks.
Yes.
We don't gamble. We manage our risks.
And that's a good point.
We're looking at also technology alternatives that may even let us extend the life cycle further. So, it's a moving target to somewhat because technology changes all the time.
Councilmember Fenter.
You know what I appreciate? One of the things that drives me crazy is, as I've checked with Alex and others, our professionals in this, is the built-in obsolescence just makes me crazy. And what I've appreciated about staff is they're challenging that. They're looking at ways of stretching. When you look at some huge, big-ticket items that we're having to cycle through because of built-in obsolescence, so I don't know if Alex had any perspective on that, but
we talk to the vendors and bring up the same concerns from Microsoft on down. They listen to some degree, but and we do have valley-wide CIO groups that talk to those folks, and we do have those kind of meetings with them. So we're letting them know we're not happy with their business model for their planned obsolescence, and some of them are listening. We're getting longer and longer life cycles on some of the products.
So that's why we're not recommending any reduction in that personal computer area. The second area we're not recommending any reduction is the parks maintenance and facility maintenance. We have just gotten to a level where this is one area that just hasn't had enough need met. We're supporting replasters and pools, the fencing. I think there's over 2,300 acres that we currently have in
reality,
parks.
If we had the money, that number would be much higher.
It should be higher.
Yes.
I mean, it should be probably
should
twice
be
that.
Yes.
We're talking all the landscape sprinkler
right.
systems, the pump systems.
I think if there's one thing that you can see that is, for years and years, the Mesa was the leader in the appearance and the maintenance of its parks.
Right.
And I think one of the disappointing things of this financial challenge is that, we've had to stretch those, and our parks are showing it. And so I appreciate, number one, that you're not cutting it anymore, proposing cutting. Number two, I look forward to the day when we can actually get that back to a level where we can really take care of our parks at a level that they that our citizens deserve. Because we get it that we've been really stretched thin on parks maintenance.
So on a managed risk basis, we just don't think we can take anything out of those two areas. Now let's talk about vehicle replacement. This gets a little bit more challenging, but it forces us to do things in a good way. Right now what we're proposing is maintain funding out of the general fund of $1.6 million. Now that's going to be largely for public safety vehicles. But what we're doing is we're reevaluating the whole fleet. Anything and some of the things that we're using to stretch this out is we're identifying any vehicles on a low utilization, we reassign those. So we don't have to go out and purchase vehicles and still maintain a good, healthy, well-maintained fleet. We've created a pool of vehicles from things we've pulled out so that if you are in a critical need for a vehicle, you can go check one out. You don't need one sitting in the parking lot. It could be driven by somebody using a day-to-day task. So we've created that. It's also identified that we're probably going to be able to eliminate about 100 vehicles from the overall picture altogether. Now, the secondary to that is from fleet, that requires less personnel. So you're not having to maintain from a cost standpoint on the operation side, and you're not having to build into your cost structure replacement capital into the future.
Vice Mayor?
Is this inclusive of all police vehicles also?
Yes, it is.
Okay. This is every vehicle. Clarification.
Every vehicle that we support out of the general fund is represented here.
Okay.
Okay. Facilities maintenance probably gets into more of a challenge, and I have Dennis Ray here. We had a situation where they weren't being as well maintained as our buildings and the infrastructure, and some of the things were starting to show. So our funding had been about $2.5 million out of the general fund each year. We've asked Dennis to come back and try to reduce it by about $900,000 so that we can and still get our life cycles. This is all our roofs, you know, carpets. It's a huge undertaking, and they do a great job. I think 250 structures that we support on an ongoing basis.
Yep.
I don't know if you have any questions along those lines.
Councilman Fender.
You know, over the past year, I've kind of had this on my mind. So whenever items have come up, and Mr. Ray knows this, I've gone out to see how they look at things, how they look at carpet or paint or stucco repair. And, you know, I've appreciated the approach that they're trying to take it from a safety standpoint to, you know, safety first, trip hazards that'll end up causing us to be sued, you know, the city. So I hope we won't, I hope we'll never abuse the safety approach to it. I appreciate how it's done, and I realize that that's a reality of life in this, you know, litigating society that we have. But I just hope we don't ever take advantage of that and think, well, somebody really wanted some carpet, we'll call it a trip hazard. And, but all in all, from what I've seen, that appreciate the work of the professionals evaluating that. And you know what, if there is faded carpet that looks warm but isn't a safety hazard, I'm hoping people will understand, hey, let's just wait till see if we can cycle it in or move it down one cycle and be able to save some money. So thank you.
So we challenged them this year, and they did come up with the reductions, and they think they can maintain our facilities on an ongoing basis under this funding level out of the general fund. Now the information technology infrastructure, we get back to now where we start talking about pricing and new technologies. We challenged Dennis and his crew to come up with, or not Dennis, I'm sorry, Alex Desick and his crew to come up with methodologies that we could still maintain the infrastructure on the backbone with our networks and so forth. And they've come up with $1.3 million in savings that they could do over this situation.
Hey, Councilmember Higgins?
And does that include fire and police technology, the computer systems that they have? Is this all under information technology?
The largest portion of the savings actually is from network infrastructure. We're beginning to work a bit with fire and police, mainly police. The biggest part is standardizing on a common infrastructure across the network, for the network, for the backbone, the data travels through the wires, that piece of it. So we're anticipating out of that 1.6, I think, Chuck, is that?
Yes.
1.3. About 75% of that is trying to work with police to build a common infrastructure. But there's more opportunities there to consolidate some infrastructure.
So they're different right now?
Somewhat, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I appreciate, you know, information technology is the one driver of efficiency that we have. I mean, we've seen it, across the economy, but certainly in the city, and there's some very, very stark examples of how technology has allowed us to maintain levels of service or even increase levels of service while reducing personnel and other costs. And so I having gotten the detailed presentation by Alex and his group as to how they've managed to continue to progress while cutting the costs and deferring some things that maybe we can wait till next year or the next year, I really appreciate the fact they recognize it, that cutting that out would not create savings, because our efficiency level would go down, and we would not be able to take advantage of some of the opportunities that are presented. And I don't know, just in some three of the changes we've made since I've been here, it's incredible. And even things as simple as our email systems, which are so much more efficient now than they used to be, and enable us to do business much better than what we used to be able to. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And that also brings up not only on the hardware side of this, but the software that you were just talking about. They can look and evaluate new ways to support and cut costs on energy. They cut costs on the types of units we're putting on the desk for people to work with. It just allows a lot of opportunity when we're keeping up with the technology and keeping up our infrastructure.
Yeah, there are a number of opportunities we've taken this year that will lead to recurring savings, which is really what we're looking for. We're not looking for the one time, which is important, but we're looking for things that will give us savings year over year. PC power management, we've kind of implemented a process where we automatically turn off PCs that are inactive. You walk away from your computer and it sits there. We come to this meeting and how many of us left our computers powered on? Well, in the near future, this network will turn your computer off if you walk away from it for an extended period of time. We're currently implementing that now for the evenings, in case you leave your computer on in the evening by accident. We'll automatically turn them off and they will come on rather quickly in the morning. We're anticipating about $77,000, I think, Chuck, of energy savings from turning computers off. So there's opportunity everywhere.
And I'll give them kudos. They've looked at all the licensing on software to see where we can save based on the standard of maintenance and so forth that they're looking at and the types of software we're using.
Pooling licenses, do we really use the assets that we have on our desk? I know Council Member Fitter is not a big user of his computer, and if you don't use a computer, we're going to take it away from you.
And Mayor, in my meeting, I volunteered that because I do everything from BlackBerry and at home, so it's a waste to have that computer looking
prettier. And there are some people in the council and staff that they do use their computer and would still like to take it away from them.
We can certainly arrange for that. But the new technology will, as the council member said, the future will allow you to do more and more through that personal device, so there will be less of a need to have the personal computer on your desk.
Good. Thank you.
So in just summary, we're looking at recommending about a $3.3 million reduction in these life cycle plans. And
but we'll call it $3.3 million in savings.
So,
we just wanted to let you know we're obviously working
working very diligently as we work through the budget process. These are savings that we would have otherwise maybe realized at the end of the year or at the close of the year fund balances. We might have seen it. But we recognize that we could do something today, be proactive, working with the different departments here to begin identifying those reductions now. So we just wanted to present that to you. This will be, as we continue in our discussions, we'll talk about other efficiencies departments are working on. We've seen a lot of departments who are really working on their inventory, where in the past we've maybe had a warehouse full of inventory, and that still works in some areas, but we're really trying to reduce that down and use more of a just-in-time kind of process for inventory items, and that will have some savings that we'll realize throughout the year. So all those are coming forward. We're just now meeting with the departments now that they've put together their packages, and so over the next couple of months we'll be presenting to the council some of the items from the departments, the ideas they've come up with, some more efficiencies and savings as we move forward. So thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Kavanaugh.
And Chris, just to follow up on that, the last slide actually in the material that we received indicated that this reflects like a 17% reduction towards the shortfall that we were looking at. Your staff identified the $19.5 million shortfall, and so I think this is it's a good start with a logical approach to help reduce the issue the deficit that we face in the coming year. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next item is to hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the 2010 federal legislative agenda. Mr. Butler.
Mayor, Council, good morning. Mayor, as we start to enter into the federal budget cycle for the coming fiscal year, we thought this would be a good time to come forward and talk about what our priorities are again this year in D.C. And as I move through the PowerPoint, feel free to stop me at any time with any questions that you may have. Of course, as you know, our delegation remains unchanged this year with Representative Mitchell and Flake representing various parts of Mesa, and then, of course, Senator Kyle and McCain. We recently passed the one-year anniversary of the Recovery Act, of the President signing the Recovery Act. To date, Mesa's received approximately $71 million in Recovery Act or stimulus funding. That's broken down from about $47 million that flowed through us through normal formulas, and that included money that we've used for park and ride lots, arterial street programs, and I know we were happy to report that Transportation Engineering a few weeks ago were able to get everything certified officially through USDOT, FHWA, so that we're ready and official on all of our arterial street programs to move forward. Consolidated Canal Pathway is another type of formula grant, along with the EECBG grants and others that flowed to us. Also, we've been very successful, especially relative to other Arizona cities, frankly, on our competitive grants. We've done a great job of getting out there and writing quality grant proposals. A lot of credit to the departments for taking the initiative to get that out. And, of course, some of the more high-profile were our fire station construction grants and our COPS funding. So that provided an additional $24 million in competitive grants that came into the city. One of the main things that Congress has been discussing when they're not talking about health care has been the jobs package that they've rebranded the Jobs for Main Street Act, and that's going to be paid for by diverting $75 million that had been set aside for TARP funding to go to stabilize the financial institutions will now be directed to Main Street program. So they're calling it Wall Street to Main Street for the Jobs for Main Street Act of 2010. That's divided up into really two main areas of funding: $48.3 billion for infrastructure projects, and I do have the breakdown listed between highway, transit, and airport, and then $26.7 billion to stabilize public sector jobs. Just want to note, out of that $26 billion, about $23.5 billion of that goes directly to K-12 teacher stabilization. But you do see about $1.2 billion for additional police officers, and we're not sure how that program is going to look yet. And $500 million to stabilize firefighter hiring and recruitment. So a lot of this is a work in progress. The House version was very different than the Senate version that just recently passed, and now they'll go to conference committee and try to hash out the differences, but it looks like some sort of jobs package will be coming soon. One of the challenges that we've already identified as a region and as a state on the highway projects and transit projects in particular, there's a very, very tight time frame in order to obligate those projects. So it's going to be a real challenge for MAG and the State Department of Transportation to come up with the projects that can be built in such a short time frame. Because, frankly, with the first round of Recovery Act dollars, we really kind of cleared out everything that we had on the shelf, and cities like ours do a great job of making sure that we have some projects that are ready to go if money becomes available. But frankly, with all the money that has been coming in, we've been clearing that out, so it's going to be a real challenge for the region and the state and other states to try to get that spent in such a tight time frame. One of the things, and council has talked about this a lot, dealing with federal and regional leadership and really making sure that Mesa has a seat at the table in D.C. has been our involvement and our engagement in national organizations and leadership, frankly, in those organizations. And I've just listed, of course, all of the various leadership positions in NLC and U.S. Conference of Mayors that that members of the council participate in, and I'm certain that we have more leadership positions than any other city in the state. It's quite a testament when we have so many people on steering committees, and of course, Councilmember Kavanaugh serves on the executive committee of NLC. Mayor Smith is on the advisory board of the United States Conference of Mayors, and so we do have a seat at the table and are involved in the decisions of these organizations as they set the federal policies. Which I might add is, I think, very good, not only for the city but for Arizona. These boards tend to be heavily eastern in their makeup, large eastern cities, and so it's good to have the western perspective and good to have the perspective of a suburban yet large city like Mesa at the table. One of the things we did want to highlight, because there are four simple policy agendas, but I think, frankly, we see a lot of similarity between what NLC is promoting and what U.S. Conference of Mayors and what some of the other advocacy groups that represent cities and towns in D.C. are looking at is four principles coming into this current federal fiscal year. One is job creation and budget stabilization. That's obviously number one goal here, you know, at the city, to make sure our finances are in order, and there's been a tremendous amount of money flowing out of D.C. to help states stabilize their budgets, but very little direct funding to cities to help stabilize our budget situations. And so one has been just the acknowledgement of that and saying that cities have direct service needs as well, and that as they're dividing money and sending it to the states, they should also consider the needs at the local level. EECBG has been a well-liked program by this Congress and this president, and we should see additional funding flow into that program in the near future. Also, we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but we're still operating without a federal surface transportation program that expired in September of last year, and so I think there's a, you know, strong desire to put that to rest and get a new five-year program in place. And something that certainly resonates in Arizona, which is ways, tools that the federal government can do to help stabilize the housing market and strengthen neighborhoods. We go through, of course, our standard litany of appropriations bills at the federal level. We sit down every fall. Our work begins back in September, really. Talking and meeting with the various departments, looking at different programs and priorities that they have at the federal level and how we can work with Congress to try to make some of those projects a reality. We've been successful over the past few years, and especially last year, in securing additional money for Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. The Military Airports Program last year funded nearly $10 million for the new passenger terminal expansion that's currently under construction now. So it was a great year for additional money for Gateway Airport. Also, we were able to close out our final design funds, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later as well, on the Vachelet-Ocmel River Restoration Project that we're doing jointly with the Salt River Pima-Maricopa Indian Community. Now, as we move forward into the coming fiscal year, and as we work with our members of Congress on what some of the city's funding priorities are, you're going to see a list that looks very similar in nature to what you've seen in the past. Again, several needs at Gateway Airport, additional taxiway expansion. There is also another account that we're looking to be able to draw some money from that will help us relocate an old airport surveillance radar that dates back to the Air Force Base time that sits on the east side of the runways that will actually be in the path of the future commercial passenger terminal when it's constructed on the east side. So we wanted to get ahead of the game and not allow that to hold us up down the road by trying to secure some federal funds in order to relocate that surveillance radar. So your typical infrastructure along with the radar again this year at Gateway. Every year we sit down with our police department as well. There's obviously a lot of technology needs that that our department has in order to keep pace with some of the changes going on in the industry and what they can do. in the field. They've identified as one of their top priorities this year mobile fingerprint ID technology that will really, in their view, aid them in the field and being able to more positively identify people that they come in contact with through a different process than just showing their ID. If you're able to do a in the field mobile fingerprint process, obviously you're going to have a lot better idea of who you're dealing with. And that's a huge technology need for PD this year. Small business accelerator and incubator money. Obviously, Councilmember Summers and others have been talking about this for a while and the efforts that are going on in our joint collaboration with ASU Polytechnic and some of the others on accelerator and incubator space in the Gateway area. So we'll continue to work on that. Also a great project that we're working with. It's a joint project between the Museum for Youth and the Phoenix Children's Museum to try to develop a childhood educational readiness program. And it's a great collaboration. It also brings in a couple of congressional districts where both Congressman Mitchell and Congressman Pastore have been very interested in helping us with this project. Mesa Grande Cultural Park, yet again, we're continuing to educate our members of Congress about the importance of stabilizing and securing this area in Northwest Mesa. It's of huge importance and significance not only to Arizona, but also for some of the redevelopment efforts that are occurring in Northwest Mesa, and Councilmember Richens continues to make sure that we're moving forward in that effort. It's a great project, and we hope and expect that Congress will see that. And also the Gateway Area Highway Development Plan. Council's already secured some funding and approved funding for the first phase of that. Obviously, we weren't able to go in all the budget permitting, weren't allowed to go in all the areas that we would have liked to in plotting out some of the area around the future East Side Terminal, and this will provide additional funds to do that. Moving on to some of our policy areas as well, federal FHWA, as we said, is operating since September 30th under continuing resolutions, basically, for their surface transportation bill. It's not a very effective way to plot out our long-term strategy, so there's a lot of advocacy groups going and working in D.C. right now, including NLC and the Conference of Mayors, to make sure that we have a reasonable and smart 5-year program put in place. But one of the, of course, major things that we've been pushing for is more direct money to the regional agencies, so that MAG it would be a more direct recipient. Right now, as you know, a lot of the money flows through the state DOTs, and unfortunately some of the priorities there send a lot of the money to parts of Arizona that may not be as needing of those funds based upon the population demands. And so we certainly want to see more direct funding to the region. So we're hopeful that a new surface transportation bill will come through. In that, we're also, of course, looking for ways to secure additional funding priority for State Route 802, the Gateway Freeway. The FAA is also functioning the same way that the DOT has been, but actually their FAA Act expired in September of 2007, so they're going on about 2.5 years now without a definitive reauthorization bill for our airports. So we continue to work with members of Congress on trying to make sure that airports like Gateway are taken care of as the new reauthorization moves forward. Light rail, we were very successful over the last few years in our partnerships with Phoenix and Tempe of securing all of the federal funding that was committed to us for the first 20 miles for the starter segment. The final payment occurred last year, and so now we were fully reimbursed as a region for the first segment of light rail. But as soon as that happens, we're continuing our efforts on our Central Mesa extension, as we all know. We are in what's referred to as the project development phase at the FTA this year, and so we'll be requesting $8.5 million from the federal government to continue our engineering work on light rail. And many of you are also aware of the change that was made by FTA last year that provided more
emphasis on transit-oriented development when deciding how to fund projects and programs along with high-speed rail. Homeland Security, police grants, I won't belabor those unless there's any questions, but we continue to make sure that we are in a competitive nature for any of the federal funding that's coming down through those two programs, through those two agencies. Vachelet-Ocmel, I referred to earlier how we had secured the last of the design funds last year from the federal government. As we were briefing the Intergovernmental Affairs Committee a couple of weeks ago, we had just been notified, and we've had an ongoing dialogue with the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community about the challenges that both of our organizations are having with funding this year. Obviously, budgets are tight, not only here, but with the tribal community. They took the issue to council, to their tribal council, a few weeks ago and requested a delay of at least a year in requesting the construction funding for the project. When you move into the construction phase, it's a substantial commitment of resources, and frankly, there are issues too that the time will allow us to sort through some of our efforts on how identifying the funding for the construction phase and other things. They reiterated their support for the project, and in fact just recently received a draft that they're hoping to send between Mesa and the tribal community to Congressman Mitchell and the rest of the congressional delegation, reiterating that this is something that is of utmost importance to the tribe and to the city, and that we after the short delay that we'll continue to seek funding for that. In addition, this was the first time in several years this project had not been included in the president's budget, and the reason it was not was that the President Obama did not recommend any new projects move into the construction phase. The federal government's trying to tighten their belt as well. I know that's sometimes laughable, but
I was going to say, is this a comedy routine now?
Yeah, moving into the joke phase of it. But this is their attempt to delay, at least for a few years as well, the Army Corps of Engineers authorizing new construction projects to move forward. So we think our delay may come at an opportune time because it's right in line with what the federal government's recommending too. Under community development, obviously we'll continue to monitor grant programs like CDBG, housing. We just had a great event the other day with our neighborhood stabilization program, turning over the ceremonial first key to a family. So there's a lot of activity, of course, at the federal level dealing with housing, so we'll continue to monitor that. Arts and cultural, we've touched on a lot of this already. Mesa Grande Cultural Park, obviously opportunities to highlight and enhance opportunities for the Museum for Youth and the Arts Center as well. Utility regulation. We obviously have a very vested interest in a lot of the policy that's happening right now in D.C. as it relates not only to natural gas but to our electrical utilities. With all the high-profile legislation moving through from cap and trade to other types of policy, it could certainly have an impact not only on how our utilities do business but ultimately on the prices that our consumers pay for dealing with our utilities with new mandates and other policy directives that may come down from D.C. So we're very active. I know Vice Mayor Jones works with American Public Gas Association, has been back several times with our staff to talk about what regulation has meant for that industry. And obviously we continue to closely monitor renewable standards and cap and trade policy that's coming out of D.C. because that could directly impact our electrical utilities. So those are areas that we continue to monitor closely. And then, of course, we don't even have to say the role that the federal government plays in water policy. And our Indian water settlements over the past several years, that really makes a huge difference and something we are very active in. And we started talking about this last year, and we'll continue to do it as well because we keep hearing this from the council, and we know it's a priority is to support the efforts occurring at Boeing as they work through military procurement and other efforts to stabilize not only the Apache program but and hopefully to bring new programs into Northeast Mesa, so we'll continue to support Boeing and work with the Department of Defense on those issues. So with that, I'll conclude and open it up to any questions that you may have.
Okay, any questions? Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Next item is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the possible delegation or designation as a Tree City USA.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. I'm Scott Boucher, Deputy Director of Environmental and Sustainability. I'm here today to talk to you about possible designation of the City of Mesa as a Tree City USA. What is the Tree City USA? It's actually sponsored by the Arbor Day Foundation in cooperation with the USDA Forest Service and the National Association of State Foresters. The nice part about this program is that there's no fees or charges associated with the application or the designation as a Tree City USA. The reason why we're initiating this program, it's actually been of interest for several years to both council and staff for the City of Mesa to become a Tree City USA. And one of the main reasons for that is that we currently meet most of the requirements associated with the designation of a Tree City USA, and I'll go into those requirements here in detail in just a moment. Some of the benefits of being a Tree City USA are not only the benefits that trees do provide as far as cleaner air, shadier streets, reduced greenhouse gases, and just their aesthetic beauty, but it also serves as a blueprint for the care and maintenance of the trees that we do have here in what we define as an urban forest here in the City of Mesa. It encourages better care of those trees, and it also, through signage and the designation, lets visitors in our community know that we actually do care about the trees and the environment that we have currently. There is also a potential for additional points when you're applying for federal and state grants that are tree-related, so it can also be a benefit in that way. The standards that are required, the first one is that the community forestry program with an annual budget of at least $2 per capita associated with tree care. You have to have community tree ordinance, tree advisory panel that helps with decision making in regards to the care of trees, and then also an Arbor Day observance and proclamation. The biggest one is the budget of at least, as I said, $2 per capita for tree care. Currently we meet these expenditures. We're at about $2.77 per capita with the expenditures that we have through transportation, our facilities folks and our parks folks, some of the things that I think we discussed earlier with park maintenance that we conduct. This includes watering and tree care in our right-of-ways around our buildings and in our parks. The second requirement is ordinance, which is another requirement that we currently meet with our desert uplands and our landscaping standards. Those ordinances meet the requirements, and then also we have our citrus sub-area plan, which would be an additional, it's not an ordinance, it's a plan, but it's something else that we can put into our application that would help us meet the requirements of the Tree City USA designation. The third requirement is an advisory panel. What we're recommending is that consists of facilities, parks, engineering, transportation, and development and sustainability. These groups have already been meeting as we've been putting together this presentation and some of the numbers and the things that you see here today. These are the folks that, as we said, are the most involved in tree care for the City of Mesa, so we think they would make sense to be part of that tree advisory panel. What they would do is track the expenditures that we have as we submit our initial application and our annual reports to maintain the designation of a Tree City USA. They'd also help develop tree care standard tree care practices, and coordinate the City Arbor Day celebration. The Arbor Day observance, this is actually the one requirement that we don't currently meet, but I think we can meet this one rather easily, would be an Arbor Day observance and a proclamation from the council for Arbor Day that we say that trees are important for the environment, and that we understand that we need to care for those trees that we do have here.
Arbor Day's in September, right?
It is actually in April. It's April 30th. It's last Friday.
All I know is when I was an elementary school kid, we always did Arbor Day. But I thought it was in September.
See, in
April. Oh, okay.
It's all over.
And that's one of the things we're also looking is reaching out to to the Mesa Public Schools. We've got some folks here today from the Mesa Grande Community Alliance that also have expressed interest in participating in an Arbor Day celebration, and we've been reaching out to the local businesses also to see who may be interested. There are several local businesses who have expressed interest in participating with the City of Mesa. So it really does provide an opportunity to include the community through businesses, community organizations, and our school system to observe Arbor Day. The next steps that we would have would be to move for approval, to get approval today to proceed forward with trying to obtain the designation of Tree City USA, have the Arbor Day celebration, which this year is April 30th. It's always the last Friday in April. And then have the proclamation for Arbor Day, as I discussed before. We would forward that on to the state forester for approval. Then that would be forwarded on to the Arbor Day Foundation. From that, we would become, upon approval, a Tree City USA. And then there would be some annual reporting in order to maintain that designation as a Tree City USA. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
More a comment. I really appreciate staff bringing this forward to the council, as well as the mayor for having it on our agenda today. As I said at our committee meeting, Stephanie Wright and Tanya Collins first came to the city early in 2004 and asked that we consider becoming a Tree City USA. And the sad part at that time, we couldn't get on an agenda by the people who set agendas at that time. And so I want to thank them for their patience and persistence and their willingness to partner with staff, and particularly, again, with staff for bringing this forward. I think this is a great idea for our community. And so at least for discussion purposes, Mayor, I'll move approval.
And I thank you for that. Unfortunately, both of you were trumped, because for the first time in our history, we have a motion via text message.
Ah. Must have been Mr. Richens.
Councilmember Richens, who has been following on Channel 11, moved to approve before moving forward.
Go back to sleep, Dave.
Okay. That is a first, I think. Oh, good. But we'll allow that there are a dual motion. Duly moved by Councilmember Kavanaugh, Councilman Richens, seconded by Vice Mayor. Now, before we go, it seems from your presentation that basically there is very little that's required to move ahead. We're doing everything already. There's unless I miss something, we don't have to really expend money additionally to establishing these things. They already exist in our organization. We're already spending the money. We have ordinances. There's not any significant thing. We just need to tweak a few things, have the Arbor Day designation. Like I said, I thought we kept doing it because I always remember having a big Arbor Day, planting a tree in the elementary schoolyard and all that when I was growing up, and don't know what happened to that. But and I know there's a few other cities here in the valley that are tree cities, and believe it or not, I get asked a lot when I'm traveling around whether Mesa is a tree city. So it does mean something to people. If nothing else, trees do, they reduce the urban heat island. We know that. They keep things cooler. They were the primary method that the pioneers used to withstand the heat in the summer. And we've sort of gotten away from that, and especially as we've overdone it with many desert varieties. That we live in the desert, I know that, and I don't want to be using water, but there are ways that you can plant water-friendly trees that also provide shade and that also help cool. And we all win in that, from basically cooling down the city and helping us with air conditioning and all that kind of stuff, which we've moved away from in our building. And you look at the older neighborhoods that were built back in the 50s and 60s before air conditioning became as efficient or as widespread as it is now, when people still had swamp coolers. There's a lot of trees on the west side of houses to block that to sun, and it seems like when we got air conditioning, we forgot the most natural of cooling components, and that was trees put in the right places. So there's a lot of benefits that come from this, so I would be supporting this effort. Vice Mayor?
Ironically, Tuesday night in our Light Rail stakeholders meeting, that discussion did come up when it talked about reasons for landscaping at rail stations and so forth. Is those bushes have been proven to reduce heat for people who are waiting for transit. Studies have shown that. So it is important that we have the foliage, the trees, and the greenery that will help to minimize the heat effects that has so dramatically grown with our concrete and asphalt sprawl here in the valley.
And once again, I hope we look at this not as a, and I know, backing up a little bit, some people will say, oh, okay, this is us now getting in people's lives trying to mandate. If that's the case, please tell me right now, because I didn't hear that. So I want to make sure that our efforts are, one, to encourage these activities, to take what we're already doing and emphasize those, and to elevate the awareness and resources available so we can actually not only increase the number of trees. I think that the awareness part is the correct use and the beneficial use that trees have in a desert setting, how important that they are. So, I mean, that's what I've heard. And
that is correct, Mayor. Okay. And it really is taking credit for what we already do.
Yeah, well. And organizing it in a way that we really maximize that credit.
Yes.
Okay. All righty, so.
So, Councilmember, are we moving ahead with the Arbor Day? Do we have time to get on for April 30th of this year?
Yeah, we've been working with some folks already. So, come Monday, we would just move full steam ahead with that.
I too remember planting the tree that you grew in a seed in a coffee can in your classroom, and then my tree was huge, and my dad never liked it because he used to drop it.
You went and planted it, and then after about four recesses, it was trampled, and you went out with life.
No, we took ours home.
Oh, you took ours home.
We took ours home, and it grew to be like a 30-foot tall tree on the side of my parents' house. It was a lot of fun. Those memories. So this is great. I think it's great. Thank you.
And we need to vote.
We need the direction.
Need a direction. So since we have motions, the direction is all in favor?
Aye.
Oh, I guess Councilmember Richens texted me it's a yes. So you have your direction. It's approved. Move ahead. Thank you. Okay, hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Oh, aye. Wait a second. This is the problem with text messaging. Councilmember Richens voted aye. E-Y-E. You're real funny, Dave. Real funny. Okay, hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. None? Okay.
Not since Monday.
Mr. Brady.
Just remind the mayor and council, today is in Mesa is the first day of spring training, so you're invited to attend today's festivities and invite you to be there. And we will then have another study session next Thursday.
Councilmember Higgins.
I just remembered, Mayor, that I had the opportunity to go to Taft Elementary School and read to a third grade and a fifth grade class for Dr. Seuss' birthday celebration.
And I was out there at a different time than you, but
yes.
With you.
And
what did you read?
I'll tell you what, it's a very fascinating book that I've never seen before. I'm not kidding. It was really good, called 1 Cent, 2 Cent, Old Cent, New Cent. And it was all about money and the history of money. And how you make money today. It was very, very interesting. I mean, so I read it twice. It was a great book. And we learned new words that neither I or the teacher knew what it was. So in the back was a little dictionary. This is very informative. And the kids rather enjoyed it.
These are words that Dr. Seuss made up?
No.
That exist?
No, they exist, yeah. But, you know, doing with the history of money, things that, you know.
I wasn't quite as a Renaissance kind of a person as you were. I just read Horton Hears a Who.
Oh, well, yeah.
Which was great.
Yeah, so it was very fun. Taft Elementary School, way out on the east
side. Just remember, a person's a person, no matter how small.
Okay? Thank you, Horton.
Thank you, Horton. It's Mayor Horton to you.
Okay.
And just one is, I think, as you say, point of personal
privilege.
Privilege. I'd like to wish my youngest son, Sean, a happy 17th birthday today.
Okay.
Yes, I know it's hard to believe I have a 17-year-old, but it's true. Happy birthday, Sean.
Okay. Is that all, Mr. Brady? Vice Mayor.
Well, since we were talking about the reading, it's my privilege to go to the Mesa Arts Academy over by at the YMCA. And they had a family reading night where they had the students come bring their parents, and they sat down on blankets in the cafeteria, and they all read as families. It was a function to get everybody reading. And it was very successful. I enjoyed going there.
Good. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I guess I need to chime in. We're a reading council. On Tuesday, I read to sixth graders at Adams Elementary School, and then tomorrow morning I'll be at Chrisman School, and then I think in 2 weeks I'll be at Washington School, so we're spread out all over the city. Thank you.
Reading time.
Learn to read month.
It's good to know that the community understands that the council does know how to read. Thank you so very much. It's yet to be determined whether we understand anything we read, but we can read. Okay. Ms. Crocker, is there any requests to speak from the citizens?
No requests, Mayor.
All right.
Move for adjournment.
I have a motion to adjourn, Vice Mayor. A second from Councilmember Fenter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. EYE. We are adjourned. Thank you.